Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB in Freeport, New York, and live streaming on the web at am1240wgbb.com and also davesgoneby.com. And Dave's Got Guests is the name of the segment, and I do have a very special guest and author with me on the show. His name is Alan Anderson, and he was both a military person and a theatrical person, and he wrote a memoir about this, specifically concerned with what was happening back in World War II, because, well, at one point he was overseas, but just about 6 months after Pearl Harbor, he was on a very special World War II detail. And he wasn't dealing with Hitler, and he wasn't dealing with Churchill or Rommel or Goebbels. He was dealing mostly with a little Jewish fella named Irving Berlin. And he's written about this in one of the more extraordinary tales of Broadway and theater history connected with American history that we've ever had. The book he's written is called The Songwriter Goes to War, the story of Irving Berlin's World War II all-army production of This Is the Army. Limelight Books has just released it, and Alan Anderson is here with us on Dave's Gone By to talk about it. Hey, Alan, how you doing?
Just fine, Dave.
Good.
I'm glad. I like your opening.
That's what my wife says. But, you know,
You've put a large canvas out there.
Well, now throw on the paint and the musical notes, and let's see. Well, just tell us again, how did all this come about?
Well, it came about because Irving Berlin, many years ago, when he was in World War I, he was asked at that time by a general that heard he was a songwriter to raise him some money. So he said to Berlin, could you put a show on that would raise us some money so we could build a little building so parents could come and see their boys before they went overseas? Well, mind you, this is 1918, and Berlin said sure, and he raised the money, got $85,000 together for them by putting on his show. So when World War II came along, he said he wanted to do this again because he felt it was a patriotic thing and it was the best thing he could do for the war. So he asked Washington to help him put it on a show, and Washington turned to people around New York City and they found a general that had Alan Anderson and some other guys in tow who had also a theater background but who were in the Army.
What was your background before you were drafted?
Well, I'd been a stage manager on Broadway in a few years leading up to the war.
Actually, just because, although we have theater segments on this program, it isn't a theater show per se.
Uh-huh.
I know this is rudimentary, but why don't you tell folks what a stage manager does?
Oh,
well, yeah, come on.
Good
go for
question.
It.
Question. A lot of people ask it. A stage manager is a guy who stays backstage, is in charge of the script, is in charge of the lights. The director of the show spends weeks putting a show on, and then the stage manager makes sure that that show continues throughout the run of the show. So he's in charge of the acting to be sure it stays up to snuff, and the lighting,
So in other words, once the director leaves,
goes up on time.
Yeah, once the director leaves, the stage manager becomes the de facto overall director of the show, pretty much.
Yeah, well, that's right. He's in the role of the director's seat when the director's finished his job and gone back to some other work.
Now you had done this, and then Uncle Sam. I mean, how old were you at this point?
I was 23.
Wow.
And I have just gotten married, and I was fresh in the Army, and after being in the Army and getting my first training down at Fort Dix, the Army, Pearl Harbor fell on the Army's job, and that's when Berlin got it.
Now, I have a silly question. As someone who was born in the mid-1960s, and thank goodness, you know, past the whole draft thing,
yeah.
I mean, well, it was still around when I was born, but not by the time I was draft age. Why, I assume there had been a standing draft since, like, World War One and before that.
No, I don't think so. It actually started with some difficulty. Congress didn't want to do it.
And this was what year-ish?
Yeah. Pearl Harbor that really got going heavily.
So that's why you weren't drafted at, like, 18?
I was drafted when I was 20.
Three. I was 23
when we did the show, but I'd been in the Army for a year and finished my training, and the war started.
So I just had this image of everybody at one point, as soon as they turned 18, boom, they were in. I didn't realize it was kind of a slow, could have been a slow process, and then Pearl Harbor sped it up by, exponentially. So, okay, so you're in the Army, and you're not even doing any theater stuff in the Army, per se.
I had my training, and I was working for a public relations officer.
And then...
Writing copy for newspapers.
Cool. I mean, I once interviewed Tom Paxton on this program, and he's told wonderful stories about how he wrote his first hit song as a clerk typist. He would finish all his work in about 10 minutes because he was a good clerk typist, and there was nothing else to do for 2 hours, so he started writing songs. So had a lot of creative people wasting away in that kind of position. But one time, like, your commanding officer, who sounds like a bit of a jerk, called you into his office because there was someone there to meet you.
He was a captain.
Captain, right.
You're thinking of that guy in the book.
Yeah.
I was a corporal, which is pretty low down.
Mm-hmm.
Berlin was not interested, however, in our rank. He was interested in our theater background.
Yeah, that person to meet you was Irving Berlin, and he was excited about doing this project. And he had, explained the whole concept of an Irving Berlin trunk song, too.
Well, Berlin, having started writing songs when he was about 14 years old, had a lot of songs he wrote that didn't get used, and so he built up this story, the story was built up on him, that he had a trunk that he kept saving every song. So when a show came along, he would look in his trunk to see whether he had a song that was right for that one. So when we started to do This Is the Army, our Army show, he looked back into the trunk for the songs that he'd done in 1918. And he did pull a couple out of there that we used.
And he also, of course, the hit song of, one of the hit songs of the show was a hit song of his original show from World War One. I think you're saying
that's
the
right.
Show opened with Irving Berlin himself.
That's right.
Singing.
Oh, how I hate to get up in the morning, which he wrote out of pure pain because he really did hate to get up. He did all of his work at night. And here he was suddenly in the Army, and they woke him up at 5 o'clock in the morning when he was usually used to going to bed.
As a matter of fact, there's a serious incident early in the book, where at one point you get an order from somewhere that not only are you supposed to rehearse basically all day well into the evening, but that they want you to drill in the morning so that you look like, or that you are, real serious trained soldiers. And what happened with that?
There was a little clash at times when the Army guy that was in charge of something didn't realize what a show person had to do. So this happened when we were first preparing the show in New York. And a colonel said he wanted us to be really crackerjack soldiers. So he wanted us to get up early and train. And Berlin, thank God, came back into the thing and reminded the Army guys who were there that we had to put the show together first and then worry about how we marched second. And so that's what we did.
Now, people have to understand that this was all going on in various parts of New York. It's not like you were in Pearl Harbor, and it's not
Germany. We weren't in a combat area. We were in New York City in the theater district.
And the other thing that people might not realize, I mean, when they see a Broadway show, if they see a play, maybe there's five or six people on stage, or if they see a musical, you might have 20, 30 people in the cast and maybe 10 people in the orchestra. You had what? What did you have on that stage?
Berlin had 300 in his 1918 show, so he said, I want to have 300 soldiers in this show again. so I can have a whole lot of singers and a big orchestra and good and stagehands and dancers and, you know, we had all kinds of entertainment in the show besides singing and dancing. Very big orchestra, 50 guys when we opened in New York.
Now, as a stage manager, how do you deal with all that?
How did we what?
You were the stage manager. How did you deal
with that? I had five assistants when we started.
Okay.
I picked them out. I said, they all had stage managing backgrounds, too. So I had them posted in various jobs.
Cool. I mean, if one guy was sick one day or something like that, I mean, there had to be a million different little things to worry about.
Well, that's true, and that's why you have several stage managers, so that you have somebody in charge of everything. And then you also have substitutes. If somebody gets sick, you've got somebody rehearsed to jump into their spot.
Now, the show was an instant and, you know, almost ridiculous huge hit of a proportion that we really don't see much these days. And you were only supposed to play a limited period of time on Broadway. But immediately that was extended, and then you got to tour.
Yep. We started off, it was going to be a four-week job, and we would put the show on for 4 weeks, raise money, and go back to our regular Army assignments. And it was such a hit at that point. I mean, the critics on Broadway, and these were guys who were reviewing everything in that opened in Broadway, they wrote some reviews that said, this is not only the best show of this season, this isn't the best show of that Irving Berlin has ever done, this is the best show has ever been done anywhere. I mean, they were just really terrific reviews.
And that allowed you guys to tour, but you didn't just stay ultimately in the United
States. Yeah, played it in New York, and then Eleanor Roosevelt saw it when she came up to New York and looked at it and said, I think my husband should see this. And so we were ordered to play it in Washington.
Right.
And from there, we went across the country and played it in a lot of 11 different big theater towns across the country, and then did it in California. Then they decided they ought to make a movie of it.
Okay.
So we did that at Warner Brothers. Then they decided they didn't want it to stop playing in the United States. They wanted it to go overseas and help the morale of our British buddies.
Now, that must have been kind of scary, because here you all were basically spending the war working very hard, but also not in any particular danger, you know, unless you count New York as dangerous. But now suddenly, you know, after spending almost already 2 years in the Army, more maybe for a lot of people,
yeah,
they were going to send you to the front.
We were draft age, and there was a war, and we were ordered to go overseas and do the show there, and we cut the show in half in terms of the number of people, because it was dangerous to try to handle that many men. You know, 300 would have been too much. So we went to 150.
And
we did the show in England first. And we were certainly within the danger of war for the next 2 years while we did the show around the world.
I mean, when you were performing in England, was there ever a point when, you know, you heard the sirens go off and and you had to stop and go into a shelter?
Well, many times we would just continue with the show, and it was up to the audience to sit there and decide if they wanted to risk it. But if we all decided that we were going to go on with the show, we did.
We're talking with Alan Anderson, author of The Songwriter Goes to War, story of Irving Berlin's World War II all-Army production of This Is the Army, which moved from Broadway to touring to, actually, England during the war. And then what happened after England?
After England, we went to the continent and played in Italy. We couldn't play in France at that point because there was no place for a show to be. But we played shows in Italy, where there was combat going on, of a great, terrifying mountain job to try to get to Rome and get the enemy out of Rome.
Hmm.
So we did shows right close to the front so that the guys could come back and see us, who were really fighting the war but needed rest at times. And, they would come back and see our show and then go back into the foxholes.
Did you have any casualties?
We didn't have one loss.
Hmm.
We had when we were in ship convoys, you know, moving from one continent to another.
Mm-hmm.
There was danger of submarine attack, and we were lucky there too, because there were plenty of submarines, but our destroyers kept them under control.
And
never got sunk.
I mean, did you ever see any actual combat or just the after effects of some bombed out areas?
We were at the front close enough to be with where the injured men were being treated, but we were not right, you know, within a mile or anything.
Nope.
But we were in areas that where the war was close to us.
Now, was Irving Berlin with you guys also in Europe, or did he...
He was with us right around the world. He did leave us about three times to go back to Hollywood because he had things that were cooking there,
mm-hmm.
and had to work on them, and he could fly back. We went everywhere by ship.
Yeah.
Too many of us to fly anywhere. But he was with us for the major part of the going around the world. A lot of the Pacific, all of Europe.
What was your overall impression of Irving Berlin?
He was a wonderful man because he really loved show business. He loved what he was doing, and he was a patriot and wanted this show to really help the guys' morale around the world. And he almost had a son, by the way. He had three daughters, grown, and they're grown and wonderful people.
Mm-hmm.
But Irving Berlin's son lived for a few days and died unhappily, and he never had a boy. And I think that it was very important to Berlin to have 300 boys.
His
responsibility for our lives was really partly in his hands because... he was the one, the power that made us go around the world. We never would have done it without him.
Well, actually, you would have been shipped overseas without him, that's for sure, but not in the same way.
right.
What happened after, I mean, how did the show continue all the way up until 45, or what?
The show played through the end of the war and went beyond We were entertaining the guys who were still in the Pacific and had to go home, but, you know, it didn't all happen one day.
Right.
It took about 3 months for us to get all of the Army back into the United States.
We were
doing shows right through that time, right up until October 1945, and the war ended really in August.
And then you were able to go home after about 6 years.
Then we were discharged gradually. It was a slow process, but I got out in November 4th or something. Got home to my wife.
And then you, and a daughter, I believe.
I had a son.
Son, right.
Yeah, and he was 2.5, and he didn't, of course, remember me. He was 4 months old when I went overseas, so
right.
It was pretty tough on a little boy to find out what a daddy was, but...
And was it tough
to
come home and then go back into... I assume you went back into the theater.
Well, I never went... I was never home during the war.
Well, the first 2 years you were in New York with your family.
Yeah, but I didn't live at home.
Right, okay.
All the time. I did live at home for a couple of months, but then when we were going across the country, we were in hotels. We had to be. That was the only way.
Right.
And as soon as we went overseas, of course, I never got home from then on.
Yeah. But once
I never got home even in the States, but my wife did visit me occasionally.
Oh, cool. Cool. But what I'm saying is after the war was over and after you finally got back from Europe in October, what was it like trying to get back into the swing of America and your job and your life?
Well, I decided that I was going to be a writer then. And funny thing happened, I didn't make it.
Okay.
I wrote a short story and found that it was hard to live that way.
Right.
And just write one short story. So I went back into the theater and two more kids and play and worked in the theater for some years, and then worked in advertising. Retired in 1979.
Wow, you've been retired for 25 years?
Yeah, and you know what?
What?
It took me this long to get this book out.
Well, I was wondering
about
that.
I didn't work on it all that time, but I put it off.
Why did you put it off for about 50, 60?
I don't know. You know, it was a hard thing. When I started writing it, it seemed to be more like a history of the Army, and not enough about the show and me. And when I got here into California, I decided I was going to try to write a memoir of that period when those guys were all together, because and get the human taste of it. And so that's the way the book came out. It's a very human story.
And the interesting thing is that Berlin lived a very long time, and you were in touch with him fairly, you know, towards the very end when you were starting to think about doing the book. And what did he have to, you know?
He was very funny about that. He really didn't like to get involved with a show unless he was on it and doing it himself. He didn't want things to be out of control. So he didn't encourage me to write the book. He thought, you know, nobody would really be interested in it, and who knows what I would say about the whole thing. But in the end, I did it, and one of his daughters, his eldest daughter,
Mary Ellen Barrett.
Mary Ellen thought it was a great thing I was going to do, because nobody else was in a position to do it. And then I was happy enough to find that there was a publisher who wanted to do it.
Did you find the publisher first, or did you write the book and then shop it around?
Yeah, you write a book. That's when I learned that it doesn't immediately go into the works. But I had a wonderful agent, and she found a wonderful publisher, so here it is.
Yeah. Limelight, by the way. Limelight Editions is the publisher.
Limelight Editions.
They do a lot of theater books and books about the performing arts and film and TV.
Mostly
theater. And the book is available pretty much everywhere, or you can go to limelighteditions.com. Yep. The name of the book is The Songwriter Goes to War. It's Alan.
It's available.
Yeah.
Of course, on computers, you can order lots of things, too.
Oh, of course, Amazon.
Available there, certainly.
Let me ask you one more question. Of all the memories that you would have had of those times, everything from the very beginning of the production of the show, through playing it on Broadway, through meeting Eleanor and then very briefly Franklin Roosevelt, through Europe, what was the single most memorable, profound, amazing scene or moment for you?
Oh, boy. I think that one of the most important moments was when we were playing for the combat troops who were trying to take Monte Cassino in Italy. And it was a very, very tough battle. It went on. The Fifth Army and other armies and our allies were all working at this, and it was a tremendous battle, and the Germans were holding on. And the most exciting, I mean, kind of moving, we were in tears a good deal, when they brought the guys back by truck from the front, the couple hours it took to drive down and get to us. And they had their guns with them. They came out of the foxhole. They got into a truck. They came and they saw that show. And when they first walked in, they were numb. And when they left there, they were joyful. There was an incredible, incredible kind of medicine poured into those guys when the war was that intense for them, and at the same time, they had a Hollywood, or rather a Broadway show in their laps that they looked at. And it was so moving. I find it difficult to talk about it even now.
Well, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk about all of it with us, and I hope folks listening will take the time and the effort to go find The Songwriter Goes to War from Limelight Editions. The author is Alan Anderson, A-N-D-E-R-S-O-N. And so I want to thank you again for being
in the David. Thank you so much for for giving me this chance to talk to you.
You're very welcome.
This is great.
Best of luck.
I know. Okay. Thanks.